guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
I'm looking forward to it, man. It's been really, really great. The energy, the vibe, the culture, the camaraderie is starting to come together. And, you know, with us having bringing pretty much everybody back from, you know, the 2021 season, you know, everybody's just looking forward to some great outcome because we know we have all the pieces. Now we just got to go out there, you know, execute when those plays come about, you know, I just saw this crazy stat, by the way. They said last year, if we wouldn't have gave up a touchdown before halftime, we would have been 15-2. How is that?
Hey.
Patrick Peterson on the all. That's a good stat right there here on Reckless Speculation Thursday. Bring our friend in here from the 5 Eyewitness News sports team, the Scoop Podcast, Darren Doogie Wolfson. Although I'm afraid, gentlemen, it's not as easy as saying, well, if we just went from being this historically bad 2-minute defense to giving up almost nothing in those situations, we would have won 15 games. Just clean it up. Be super easy.
It is very convenient. By the way, happy Reckless Speculation Thursday. Always my favorite day of the week. Was Patrick Peterson wearing a Charlotte Bobcats jersey? I know that doesn't translate to those who listen to just the audio portion of our conversation, but for those who watch us on YouTube, like that was the old Charlotte Bobcats colors, but it looked like it said NBA across the front, not Charlotte or not Bobcats. But that was an interesting jersey that Peterson was wearing. But yeah, Phil, like, that's who they were. Like, they weren't capable of making stops last year in the final 4 minutes of halves, the final 2 minutes. Yes, we're well aware that historically speaking, going back multiple, you know, decades, that this was the worst defense in the final 4 minutes of a half, the final 2 minutes of a half. But, like, that's who they were, right? They couldn't do anything about it. They knew it. They knew it mid-season. They couldn't fix it. You know, that's why we're talking about, you know, somebody new in charge of running the defense. That's why, Phil, Judd and I went back and forth on Tuesday. He asked me about some of the things I'm fascinated to see with the first practice now, what, 6 days away. The pads come on Monday, August 1st. I'm most curious to see Ed Donatell, the defense. Like, I still think the offense is going to be good. I'm curious to see if this defense is capable of getting the stops that they need for this team to win double-digit games, for them to get back to the playoffs, heck, for them to get over 500 for the first time since 2019.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing there, though, is this. The problem with rankings and statistics is they don't take into account situational things. And so offensively, like, we could go back and say, man, if the Vikings had just had some more stops, they would have won 15 games, which is asinine, because the reality is this. If they had been able to function beyond the scripted plays consistently, they would have blown teams out. Like, you wouldn't have had to worry. You would have had an offense that would have been top five, if not three. Like, if you take the scripted plays, I'll always go back to, because it's the poster child game for 2021, the Cleveland game, okay? You came out and rolled. You cruised down the field. You looked like you were going to kick Cleveland's ass. You got through the scripted plays and we're like, I guess there's not much more here. I mean, the second guy that statistically we could talk about, and it's not Cousins, is Jefferson. If you just look at Jefferson's first 2 years, the stats are off the charts. He's a record-setting young wide receiver. If you watch the games, though, you see why there's the capability for Justin Jefferson this season to be used much more, much smarter. So, like, that's the problem with the one problem with statistics and ifs and buts, because this offense, if you could have even harnessed the scripted plays for like four more series, you would have blown some teams out. It wouldn't have been close, and your defensive shortcomings might have been a problem, but not nearly as big a problem as they ended up being.
Well, that's fair. I mean, Phil, you probably know this. Where did the Vikings rank last year? 3 and outs.
Offensively, they had the most 3 and outs of any team in the league.
Okay, so
I mean, tied with Houston
speaks to what Judd is laying out. So that's fair, plenty fair. I'm still most fascinated though to watch the defense. I really am.
Sure.
You know, Ed Donatell, Za'Darius Smith, Danielle Hunter. Like, what can Ed do? Like, that to me is the key to this, right? Even with the offensive shortcomings last year, I think with O'Connell, with Phillips coming in, I think the offense is going to be pretty darn good. I don't know yet how good this defense will be.
Yeah. So the Vikings, because they said goodbye to Nate Stanley, they have an open roster spot, and there was some speculation that maybe Kyle Rudolph would be brought back as, I would assume, more of a backup or red zone tight end to Irv Smith, but then he goes and signs with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to go play with Tom Brady. So the Vikings, and you can maybe provide some insight into how close or not the Vikings were to bringing Rudolph back, but they do have an open roster spot kind of on the eve of training camp, which is interesting, Dukes.
It is interesting. Now, they have not made an offer to Ndamukong Suh as of yesterday, but that is still a name to keep an eye on, or maybe they add some other interior defensive linemen. I feel bad for Nate Stanley. I saw him at Woodbury High School a couple Tuesdays ago. Like, he was pumped. My colleague Alec ended up talking to him. He was pumped about another training camp with the Vikings. Now, he doesn't get that opportunity. So, yeah, it is interesting. What are the Vikings going to do with that open roster spot? Because typically you don't make a move until you have to make a move. Like, why make the move on Nate now when you didn't necessarily have to? So what do they have up their sleeve on Kyle Rudolph? So I predicted with Judd on Tuesday. We spoke at like 9 a.m. I said if I had to bet, Rudolph will end up with the Buccaneers. That's because at that moment, like to use the football analogy, like the deal was at the 1.5-yard line. Like it was just about done. I was led to believe it was just about done on Saturday, in fact. Now, somebody else told me Tom Brady was blowing up Kyle's phone the last 24 hours, that maybe even Tampa came in with a little bit more money.
Well, just for fun, was Kirk blowing up Kyle's phone too? Were they both?
I don't sense that Kirk was blowing up Kyle's phone. And on that, like, I really do believe Kyle had genuine interest in rejoining the Vikings. Heck, wife is here. Kids are here. He has the house here. There was legit interest in rejoining the Vikings. But Kyle also wants to win a ring. Like, how do you turn down Tom Brady? But I think the Vikings chatter was driven by the Kyle side. Like, I don't think the Vikings were hanging up the phone. So were there conversations? But I truly believe that it was the Kyle camp that initiated those conversations. Bottom line, now that it's done and over with, Kyle is on his way to the Buccaneers. I just don't sense anything ever came all that close to him signing with the Vikings.
Jeb, we still need a 30 for 30 documentary on the 2,000-word manifesto, the goodbye that Kyle Rudolph wrote in the Players Tribune that included like 50 different teammates and staffers, Matt Cassel, Teddy Bridgewater, mention of Kirk, Ragnar. the backup equipment guys, you know.
The thing about this is I didn't agree with the Vikings' decision to hang on to as the amount of veterans that they did after Kwesi and then O'Connell subsequently got the job. But my God, if you start to bring guys back, shut it down. Like, you need to go in. This is a different direction. And the thing that, why I think you're right, and why I think it was driven by Kyle's camp, probably just to say, well, look, the Vikings did call, is because of this.
Although I'm telling you, I don't think they called.
Well, no, but
I'll
he's going
to do some more digging on that, but he's the conversation.
But here's the bottom line too. Tight ends in what they're about to do are going to play a very specific role. And so like if Irv Smith doesn't work out, like he gets hurt again or he's out, you're not going to then go get a guy that can necessarily catch passes, because you'll replace what you envisioned Irv Smith with another receiver. So like, I don't think that this is the old, oh my God, we don't have our, you know, our Antonio Gates or our Kelsey tight end. I think this is if Irv Smith can't play, we'll just transition to throw an extra receiver onto the field like the Rams did. So this whole thing of like, we got to bring back a guy like Kyle is, I think, folly. So I think you're exactly right.
Well, on Irv Smith Jr., he was over at the Twin Cities Pro-Am the other day, the basketball gathering over Minnehaha Academy. Somebody there told me, for whatever it's worth, it's not like he was playing, right? He was just there, but
sure,
that he looked good, he sounded good. But yeah, when you look at the tight ends on the Vikings roster, it's a bunch of blockers outside of Irv, right? Zach Davidson, Ben Ellefson, the guy they just drafted from South Carolina, Johnny Munt. Like, those guys are more blockers than pass catchers.
Right.
And because now, 2 days later, Judd, from our conversation on Tuesday, that I've gathered that the Vikings didn't come all that close to signing Kyle Rudolph. Now, there are still some free agent tight ends out there. Jared Cook. There's some other guys that are capable or somewhat capable. But I think it's what you're saying, that if Irv can't function, goes down, whatever the case may be, you just replace him with a wide receiver. In fact, I would not be shocked if the initial 53-man roster contains 7 wide receivers.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, well, we've been talking about this. Of course, he's my guy. Is it Hennigan? Is it Appalachian State receiver guy? The only guy on the roster, basically, he's an undrafted free agent that has returned punts in his college career. So, you know, so could a 6th or 7th receiver just be a punt returner, for instance, and then...
Well, I mean, it's Jalen Naylor. You know, I mean, maybe the front runner for Mr. Mankato, 6th-round pick from Michigan State. You know, is he capable? I mean, he's returned before. Now, I'll trust your knowledge on that. I had a conversation with Jalen shortly after the draft, but I don't recall what the number said. So I'll trust you, Phil, that he did more kick returning in East Lansing, not punt returning. But I wonder if that's a skill set that can translate on a guy like Jalen Naylor. I mean, right now, like, even though he was a late-round draft pick, like, I see Jalen Naylor on the 53-man roster.
Yeah.
What do we know, Dukes, about the status of second-round cornerback Andrew Booth, who obviously did not basically take part in the spring camps? Do we think he's going to be set to go on day one of training camp? Because I think if he is, he at least can get himself into the mix to certainly compete for some playing time.
Yes, although my money would be on Cam Dantzler starting week one against the Packers, not Andrew Booth Jr.
I would put Doogie's money on that, too.
Tried to dig on his status. Now, I will tell you, in a conversation during minicamp, you know, he alluded to the idea that come late July, he'll be good to go. But, Judd, I unfortunately don't have a very specific update on. Yes, we will see him on the field next Wednesday. So, to be determined. Hopefully, I have that update for you maybe Tuesday morning next time we chat. I'd also like to believe, because I feel confident Ed Ingram's deal will get done, that Andrew Booth Jr.'s deal will also get done. But we've seen a transition the last couple of years with these second-round picks, especially the higher second-round picks, getting 3 years fully guaranteed, then even some money guaranteed in that final year, that fourth year. So presumably that is the hiccup right now. You know, what are the Vikings willing to guarantee to Andrew Booth Jr.? But certainly led to believe Ed Ingram, there's nothing to worry about on that front. I fully expect him to be on the field next Wednesday.
Are there any other either surprise or otherwise under the radar injury concerns? I feel like every year you get to camp, it's like, oh, these two guys are progressing slower than usual. But Danielle Hunter, Za'Darius Smith, we talked about Booth, but are there any other little injury things to keep an eye on here in the next week or two?
Well, Amir Smith-Marset had the boot on during minicamp, but he got the boot off before June was over. So he's been out of the boot now for at least 3.5 weeks. So my understanding is he is good to go. I mean, I was with Alexander Madison a week or two ago. He looks solid. Adam Thielen looks solid. So no, I have not heard of any other, you know, deep concerns. I mean, to me, the number one thing I'll be keeping an eye on injury wise is where is Irv Smith Jr.'s knee?
Yeah.
Is he ready to do everything that he needs to be able to do?
Something else, too. It's, you know, the narrative and the reality is just how bad this defense was last year. But the first 7 weeks of the season when Danielle Hunter was on the field, nobody was talking about how bad this defense was. I don't think it was 2017 Mike Zimmer defense, but they were number one in pressures from a pass rush standpoint. So, you know, if Danielle Hunter is healthy and playing, and, you know, Za'Darius Smith should be a nice addition too, but we're probably going to give a lot of credit to Zimmer being gone, Donatell's system overhauling things. But the reality is, if Danielle Hunter plays, I don't care if you're running a 3-4, a 4-3, if you're running the Bears defense from the 80s, like, your defense is going to be better if Danielle Hunter is playing 15, 16, 17 games, Dukes.
Absolutely. Like, I would put him among the top 5 pass rushers in the game.
Yeah.
Like, is anybody going to debate that? I think he's that good. I think it's one of the better contracts, even coming off the injury issues the last couple years. I still think it's a team-friendly contract. I'm still shocked, going back many years, that he actually signed that contract. So, yes, I don't care if it's a 4-3-3-4. Yeah, I mean, that defense, you're right, Phil. I mean, when he went out, you know, it took a turn for the worse. Now, you know, Za'Darius Smith, Judd, we talked about this when he initially signed. Yep. Well, committed to Baltimore, right? Then we were wondering what the heck took place with those negotiations. Ultimately ends up here. Like, at his age, with the back, like, there's cause for concern there. He's okay now.
Right.
He may very well be okay September 19th in Philadelphia, go up and down the list of games there September into October. But how will Za'Darius Smith become middle of the season? As we get into the dog days of the season, November, then when the games ramp up again in terms of, you know, intensity, although, you know, 17, they're all going to be pretty intense. But you get my point, as you're making that push for the playoffs in December, how will Za'Darius be then? That, to me, is going to be a big question, too.
I do think a big difference, potentially, that we're going to see starting Wednesday when they take the field, and then to Duke's point, when they get into full pads on August 1st, is this. Camp KOC is going to be, I think, in stark contrast to Camp Zim, in the sense that, like, when guys didn't take part before, it was, oh, my gosh, they're not taking part. Because, you know, Mike liked to keep an intensity, I think, that was a little bit more, and this is fine, a bit more old school, probably. O'Connell, I think, is going to really be Baldelli-esque in you know, trying to emphasize rest and keeping guys fresh, which, by the way, in this league, not a bad idea. But my point is, I don't think it's going to quite come across as the crisis point that it did when guys didn't practice with Mike, because Mike clearly still became annoyed by that. I think O'Connell is going to err on the side of resting guys more and absolutely never be upset about it.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, and, you know, the three preseason games, it's three still. Like, I don't expect to see guys playing in those games, you know, the main guys. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a pretty lax training camp. Now, I'll still be interested to see those one-on-one battles. We will see, when they are in pads, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, one-on-one battles. You know, and, you know, like, it's going to get somewhat physical, so I'll be keying in on those. But, yes, for the most part, you know, we're not going to see the Oklahoma drill or anything crazy like that.
That'd be great if he just broke it out.
Let's do it. The Oklahoma drill, one of my favorite footballisms. Before we continue on here with Reckless Speculation Thursday.
Reckless Speculation.
Boys, old Macadac had to have a little sit down with Maya Mackey yesterday. So, you know, she loves her Nutrisource chicken and rice food. And we're trying to get Stella Zolgad. Look at this right here. For the YouTube audience, Doogie, this is Maya Mackey, and this is her reaction when she knows that old Macadac has a big old scoop of Nutrisource chicken and rice food ready to throw in her bowl. Well, after she had her breakfast yesterday, she decided, when Mom wasn't looking, to partake in a little Raisin Bran as well. And so we had to take her in to make sure that she was okay, because I don't think dogs are supposed to eat raisins. So the message for Maya here is, you'll stay consistent digestively and gut-wise and poo-wise if you just stick to the Nutrisource chicken and rice food. No more human food, no more Raisin Bran. Just stick to the Nutrisource and you'll be good, Maya.
Stella is anxious. She's anxious to try it now because she said, you know what? I'm getting older. Like, I mean, let's be honest. This Zolgad household ain't young. From Stella to Dawn to Judd, we ain't young.
The geriatric.
Yes, exactly right. And there's nothing more important at this age, as Stella can tell you, than diet. So, yes, Phil has introduced me to the world of Nutrisource, and Stella, excited to try that.
It's a third-generation family-owned and operated company out of Perham, Minnesota. And so NutrisourcePetFoods.com is where you can find retailers near you. And Nutrisource is the official dog food of all of the Mackie and Judd pups here. So highly recommended. Maybe Vinny and Scooby. Maybe we can get some other dogs hooked in here. So
there's Nutrisource. Too loud, otherwise he's gonna come up here and start barking.
NutrisourcePetFoods.com. Also, a quick shout out to our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. So in a few days here, the Federated Challenge takes place again, which is all about raising money for Big Brothers Big Sisters. Since 2005, $44 million raised, and this money goes to help benefit Big Brothers Big Sisters and the formation of mentoring relationships with children facing adversity to help them get into better schools, have brighter futures. If you want to find out how you can make a difference or maybe be a big yourself, go to federatedchallenge.org. Okay. One more Vikings thing for me anyways. Speculation. So on Purple Daily today, we're going to do a deep dive into just Kellen Mond and the first 15 months of Kellen Mond and going into his second training camp. And one of my biggest questions, Doogie, is he's been on the team now for 15 months. You know, he had the three plays against Green Bay and then Zimmer threw him under the bus. And that was kind of the most we've heard about Kellen Mond in 15 months. Otherwise, I feel like there's been very little reported or said, or he's just kind of been in witness protection for the better part of 15 months. Have you heard anything at all whatsoever about Kellen Mond recently?
Well, not necessarily recently, but I know this much. If he can't beat out Sean Mannion, like there are serious issues, right? So like to me, you know, now Kirk Cousins is Iron Man, right? Like he doesn't get hurt. Maybe I just jinxed him, but like he doesn't miss games. That is one good quality about Kirk. But like I think Kellen is going to be the number two quarterback. Like if I had to bet, you know, right now I'd say Kellen Mond is on this roster, the number two guy. Sean Mannion is gone. But no, not necessarily. Now, if you want me to, I'll reach out to his former trainer, Hugh Jackson. You know, one of Zim's guys, the former Browns head coach who trained him pre-draft. You know, he still keeps in good contact with him. You know, so I can dig a little bit if you want me to, but no, you're right. We haven't heard much. I haven't seen now, you know, not that I'm super active on TikTok or Instagram or anything like that, but I haven't seen any social media posts about, you know, his off-season training or anything like that. So he's another guy. Yeah, I mean, come Wednesday, you know, some eyes will be on him. But I'm just telling you, like, if you can't beat out Sean Mannion, we do have serious issues.
Yeah. All right, Dukes, to transition to Twins, where do we stand now as they get set to return for the – in air quotes, second half, in Detroit, where do we stand on roster construction, roster decisions, and where do you think things are trending with a team that definitely has some good players but definitely needs a lot of pitching?
Do they have the cojones is yeah. what Judd is asking.
Well,
or cojones for bail?
What, yeah. Phil? I mean, you know, they can attempt to go all in on a Frankie Montas trade or a Luis Castillo trade, but like, are they going to be able to trump the 5, 6, 7 other teams chasing starting pitching, including, you know, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, the Yankees? Like, I'm not quite sure the Twins have the ammo to do so, but certainly they've engaged the A's in trade talks. They've engaged the Reds in trade talks. They've engaged the Cubs on Robertson, right? Like, you know they need, I mean, realistically speaking, to really have a chance, one starter, two relievers. Now, do I think they're about to acquire three pitchers? That might be a bit aggressive, but like, I sure hope it's more than one. All right. So like, you know, people don't want to hear this. I get it. You know, talk, who cares? Like, let's see action, but you know, they're pretty active. I mentioned with Judd on Tuesday, Phil, I was at a charity event on Monday that Derek Falvey was listed as supposed to be attending. Well, he didn't end up showing up, you know, so I thought, hey, something must have come up because the draft was over at that point for a few hours, the Monday portion of the draft, rounds 3 through 10. So he was definitely done in the war room. But, you know, my understanding is he was going right back to work. So he, you know, missed out on a charity event. So trust me, like really no all-star break for Derek, you know, and Thad and those guys. I mean, escaping here and there throughout the course of the summer, you know, enjoying a little bit of family time here and there, but not much. You know, they're grinding away. I am curious to see what happens with Miguel Sano. You know, his rehab clock expires here in a handful of days, 20 days total. You know, we're into double-digit days on the rehab assignment. What happens there? I'm just telling you guys, like, if they could trade him, I think they'd trade him. Because, like, I don't know if you can make a logical case that you would rather have Sano on the roster than Celestino. Like, to me, that would be the move. You would send Celestino down. I don't think they're ready to expose Nick Gordon to waivers. It does turn out, so something I said last week, and I checked on this, Kyle Garlick still has an option. But, like, you want Garlick in there against lefties more than Miguel Sano. Like, this isn't Miguel Sano of 5 years ago mashing lefties. Miguel Sano the last couple of years hasn't mashed lefties. So, like, I don't know how Sano fits on the roster. So if they could trade him, even if they have to eat a little bit of money, is there a team out there So that certainly is something I'll be keeping an eye on. You know, then, like, just what trades do they make? You know, some injuries. You know, Kenta Maeda. I will tell you this on Maeda. So I mentioned a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week, whenever it was, that him and his agency, a big agency, Wasserman, split. Digging a little bit more, I sense somewhat, maybe this is somewhat fitting into the reckless speculation narrative here on Thursday, but I'll throw it out there that Maeda does want to come back this year. The former agency said, yeah, why don't we wait until 2023? No reason to really extend it. Now, he hit 80-something in a bullpen the other day, just throwing fastballs at this point. You know, but could he help at some point mid-September? Like, I think even early September is really aggressive. But could he potentially help? I still think it's a long shot. I really do. But I guess you can't necessarily rule that out.
Yeah.
Randy Dobnak gave me an update on his situation the other day. Like,
I forgot about him.
Yeah, that could help. Let me read what he told me.
If they try to play this off as if, listen, I know we didn't make a splash at the deadline, but
we're getting
Alcala and Dobnak back. So
that
and
won't
Sano.
Work. Yeah, no, rightfully so. We would destroy them, right? We would rip them to shreds. No. They cannot do that. They need to bring in outsiders.
Mean,
they cannot bring
that. It's kind of what they do. Like,
maybe Kenta Maeda, maybe Matt Canarino. No. They cannot do that, Phil. They know that. Trust me. I promise. Dobnak, here is what he told me. Going well, threw 20 fastballs off the mound 2 days ago. He feels good. He's at about 80%. He has a fastball / changeup bullpen for tomorrow. So he's not necessarily close to returning to game action, but that is the update on Dobnak. On Canarino, he continues to rehab in Fort Myers. He is progressing very well. He sees himself back in Wichita, AA, in early August, about 2 weeks away. He's got some funky stuff, 24 and a half years old. Now, that would be a big ask to bring Canarino up to help this bullpen.
Yes.
But he's a Twins prospect that I know a lot of fans pay attention to. So just know that he's doing really well right now, coming back from that elbow issue.
Here's one of their biggest issues is they just, you know, we're 6 years into this front office, and the whole thing about Falvey was, hey, he's coming. He's one of the core pieces of this, you know, brain trust in Cleveland that's going to bring over this pitching development acumen. And we haven't seen a lot of that. And so whether it's pitching development.
You've seen some of it, though, right? I mean, like.
A little.
Seen some.
It's not zero, but.
It's not zero. I think it's better than when he got here.
But here's the point that I was going to make. Whether it's lack of. Like, look at their farm system right now. It is not regarded as a top 5 or 10 farm system. And one of the big problems for them is. It's not like they've spent 6 years gutting their farm system, trading young players away for win now pieces. So, like, they've been building a farm system for 6+ years, and it's still, like, not top half of the league. And you look right now, go look at, like, the MLB pipeline rankings from preseason, and Austin Martin is in the top three. Jordan Balazovich, it has, like, a 12 ERA in the minor leagues this year. So some of the guys that were supposed to be near the top of your sort of underwhelming prospect list are terrible this year. So you already have fewer pieces to trade, period, and then the pieces that you would ordinarily potentially trade for Luis Castillo are performing terribly in their age 22, 23 seasons in the minors, Doogie.
Correct. Now, it's not across the board. You know, guys like Spencer Steer, Matt Wallner.
Yep, those guys are coming up.
But you're right. They are not a top 10 farm system. I'm not quite sure they are a top 15 farm system. Now, I get it. Those lists are subjective, but they're not bottom five, but they're probably somewhere – you know, lower half. I mean, maybe closer to 16, 17, not 25, but it's not an excellent farm system. That goes back to how exactly do you trump other teams' offers for some of these elite pitchers? I just don't know how you do it.
You got to include major league players. I mean, it would have to be, and this is going to sound crazy to people, but all right, Alex Kirilloff.
Well, I'm not trading Kirilloff, and I don't think they will either.
What could he get you?
Miranda, sure. Yeah, Miranda, okay. I don't know about Kirilloff. Maybe Larnick, too. I can be talked into Larnick. I can be talked into Miranda. I can't be talked into Kirilloff. I would be surprised if they trade Kirilloff before August 2nd. The biggest issue to me with this regime is, like, these bullpen arms they've signed going back years. Joe Smith, Blake Parker,
yep.
Colomay. Like, they have swung and missed on so many relievers. And I get it. Relievers are incredible. Cyclical, good 1 year, not so good the next year, but like the track record on signing free agent relievers is horrendously bad.
Their overall development of arms, period, for an administration that was supposed to be have an expertise in that area is probably the most surprising thing and disappointing thing.
Well, I mean, like, if you look at, you know, now, Phil, you're going to debate me on this just being a mundane stat, you know, who cares? But ERA, if you look at starters collective ERA, you know, going back a handful of years, I mean, you know, pretty good, especially from where it was. Like, so I do think there are some positives we can point to. But sure, like Derek Falvey was brought in as this pitching savant.
Right.
So that's fine that if you thought in 2016 that if we fast forward 6 years, 2022, if you expected more by this point, I'm not necessarily going to debate you on that. I'm just, you know, I'm not. But I want to point out that to me there are some things we can look at and say, okay, that was a positive. That is a positive.
My biggest question for them here in the next week or so, you know, I guess next 2 weeks, I love the Correa move. All right. I know that it was sort of gifted to them and it might just be a 1 year thing because he can opt out and probably will $35 million for 1 year. And my question to them is, okay, why did you do this? So you did it presumably for one of three reasons or maybe all three reasons. Number one would be your team can be better in 2022. And it is, but it's only performing at an 86 win pace right now with, you know, 2.5 months to go in the season. And the White Sox are probably waking up. So, like, your team is good, but it's not ironclad playoff, and you're not the Yankees or the Astros.
But I don't trust the White Sox, Phil.
We'll see what they do in the second half. But, like, your team is good, but you didn't, like, solidify your playoff status with this move necessarily. Okay. The second reason would be to spike attendance, right? You get one of the better players in baseball to come in. It's a big splash move. Well, this is the lowest average attendance outside of the COVID years in the history of Target Field. So it's not like people are – now, Declan bought season tickets, but it's not like people are flocking in droves of 38,000 to Target Field. And so the third reason I don't think they would ever mention publicly, but it has to be a conversation in the next 2 weeks, which is if we aren't winning enough and if attendance isn't spiked enough, does it make sense to use this asset that could walk away for basically nothing, maybe a compensation pick? If there's two or three teams that would love a bat and a sure-handed glove up the middle, could you get three really solid prospects or something for him in the next couple weeks? I'm not advocating for that. I think you should trade for three pitchers, like you said earlier in the show here, Doogie. But if you don't have the stomach or the resources to trade for three pitchers, I think it's really risky to ride this thing out as constructed and risk Carlos Correa walking away in 3 months from now to become a free agent. So what do you think of that whole conundrum I just laid out?
Well, I think it's a fair conversation to have, but I'm just telling you, Phil, I will bet you anything that Carlos Correa is here on August 3rd. Like, I don't see a trade coming, but I understand where you are coming from, but they're going to play this thing out. They just are, you know, and, you know, I don't know how to quantify it, but, you know, multiple people over there will tell you the influence he's had in the clubhouse on guys in the cage, his leadership, like they want that for a full year. The expectation always has been that he's going to opt out. Like, why would he bypass unrestricted free agency at 28 years old?
Correct.
Last offseason, weird offseason. We've returned pretty much to normalcy. Like, why would he pass up a chance? Like, this is the time to get the 7 or 8 year contract. So, yeah, I've always expected him to opt out. The question is, do the Twins want to, for the first time ever, present somebody with a $200 million contract? Like, until I see it, I won't necessarily believe it, but it would be nice if Carlos Correa was here for a really long time. But I'm just telling you, I don't see a trade happening. He does have, what, a 5-team no trade? So is it very possible the Astros, for example, are on that list? You know, could the Astros use maybe an upgrade at shortstop? You know, is the young kid Pena, is he even healthy right now? I'm apologizing. I don't have intimate knowledge of the Astros roster right this second. I'm just trying to come up with even – he's a great player, right? Somebody probably would take him. But, like,
yeah,
of all the contenders, who's desperately seeking a shortstop?
So there's an intriguing factor.
Is there, Phil? You tell me.
Seattle would be the only team I think that could make a pull for him. There's a J.P.
Well, and they paid Crawford, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they gave him good money and – he's a really good fielder, but sure. I mean, would Correa be an upgrade on Crawford? Yes, of course, Declan. Agree with you on that. Heck, he'd be an upgrade in Baltimore, right? I mean, who's Baltimore's shortstop? Right? I mean, you know, we can come up with, teams where you're like, okay, they should acquire Carlos Correa.
But Seattle's got the ammo. They could trade Kelenic. Really? You know?
Yeah. I think there's a different move there for Seattle. I don't think it's them trying to chase down a shortstop. Maybe I'll be wrong on that one, but like I think, you know, after they paid Crawford that they believe enough in him, especially with the glove, that he'll be their shortstop.
So the intriguing thing about this entire conversation goes back to something Phil brought up, I think it was a few weeks back, which is Carlos Correa is one of the players, not surprisingly, encouraging the Twins to make aggressive moves because he's like, I'm here for a year. Let's make the most of this. If they don't do something substantial in today's sports world, tons of guys are friends and talk constantly, okay? So, like, and Correa clearly is a leader in baseball. Like, he might have cheated, but he's clearly really well-liked and respected. And I think it'll be interesting if the Twins do not make a bold move, because I think Correa will publicly or privately, but to his friends in baseball, say, I'm not quite sure why they signed me, because I went there and we were all geared up to do something special. We're in first place, and they went out and got Sam Dyson of 2022. So I do think it's an interesting time period for the Twins where Correa's words and thoughts on this are going to have an impact long term if they do just say, you know what the hell? Well, we're not going to trade Correa, but we will play this entire thing out. So I think that's like an underlying storyline here of the Twins having an opportunity and seeing if they do something aggressive to try and capitalize on Correa's on the fact that he's here for a season.
Well, how do you define aggressive? Like, they're going to do something. Like,
it can't be Sam
Dyson. Positive. There's way too much dialogue for us to be having a conversation on August 3rd that they didn't do anything. That the
playoff rotation starter and two relievers that slot in as your second and third best relievers behind Durant.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's what they need to do.
Maybe a little aggressive, but like, aggressive. Starter and reliever. Like, that would not shock me, too. Maybe not all three, but two. Like, they're going to do something,
right? But it can't be. But Doogie, it can't be a slappy.
Will we call it aggressive? Nope. That to me is
it can't be slappy. It can't be Sergio Romo, and that worked fairly well. But like that was just a let's do something type of a move. It has to be something much more than they did in 2019 for me to be satisfied at the deadline.
But how do you beat Phil? How do you beat what the Cardinals can offer, what the Blue Jays can offer?
Okay, then you're fired. Like, you've had 6 years. This is where I'm at with this. And I'm not ripping you here, but this is what happens with like Twins coverage and stuff. It's like, well, how are they supposed to do? You guys have had 6 years to build a farm system as trade chips to put yourself in a position to do something at a deadline. And they decided not to in 2019. Now it's like, okay, well, here's another chance for you. And so if you're right, and the answer is they can't compete with St. Louis, then I say, then what are we doing? Then why are you employed? Why, like, then what have you been building for the last 6 years?
Well,
if you don't, after 6 years, you don't have enough trade chips anymore?
It goes back to the 26-man roster, right, that you need to move off of somebody on this roster. I'm just telling you, I don't foresee Kirilloff being that guy. I certainly would not move off of Kirilloff, but Miranda, Larnick, I don't think Celestino's got a whole lot of trade value, but like we need to look at those types of guys, right? Maybe Miranda, you know, more than anybody else that you
Arise.
Have to be. And I do think they would be. I think Arise is here.
But here's the thing about Arise, all right? People are going to kill me for this. I know that he's about to win the American League Batting Championship. He's not a very good defensive player. He's kind of positionless. Like, he's not like a plus defender at any position. And if that batting average dips a little bit because maybe some of his batted ball luck comes down and he's no longer a 340 hitter, but he's like a good solid 305 hitter, but with not much power, you know, not the most amazing base runner. I mean, this is the peak of Luis Arraez. Do you think he's just a 340 hitter every year going forward, or is this the peak of his career and he's got 2 or 3 years left? I'm just saying, he's not untouchable to me if you can
He shouldn't be untouchable. Agree on that.
If you can get a lights out starting pitcher and a great reliever or something, you know, it's like he should be on the table.
All right.
So,
well, would you do if the Reds say, we want to rise, plus we need a little bit more, we will give you Luis Castillo? Is that a deal you're making?
I guess I'd need to know, do they also have a really good reliever they can kick in here too, because they would be getting like 3 years of Luis Arraez is a really good player. So I don't want to minimize it, but you'd be giving them more value for 3 years than they'd be giving you. So they'd have to kick something else in, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, and that's where, you know, I mean, that's where they're kicking around all these ideas. You're right. If you're giving up a rise, not only are you getting back a starting pitcher in the deal, you're getting back, you know, that team's really good reliever. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. I don't think he's untouchable. I'll leave it at that. You know, like, we know Buxton isn't going anywhere. I'm telling you, I don't see Correa going anywhere. I can't quite say that about Luis Arraez right this second. And I'm with you. Like, do I think he's a 340 hitter for the next 2 or 3 years? Probably not. I still think there's definitely a 305 to 315 type hitter there, though, every single year. So there's enough value there with him under team control, as you said it, Phil, for what, at least three more years? Or is it four? Is it four or three? But we're talking more than two. It's definitely three minimum. Yeah. So,
and of course, I know what happens. Like, when I say stuff like this or Correa, people are like, Mackie wants the Twins to trade Arraez. I'm not saying that. I'm saying get creative and make this team better. Like, the net should be that you make this team better. And there's only like two or three guys that are untouchable to me. So that's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, would you think about moving somebody like Jorge Polanco?
Yes.
Right? Max Kepler. I mean, Kepler absolutely should be on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even with, you know, the regular numbers being down last year, the underlying numbers suggested there was a little bit more there last year. Max Kepler's long had fans around the game. Like, you know, you need to be thinking about something like
what's
that.
Kepler,
it's unfortunate that Larnach
though?
Is hurt right now. What? That Larnach is still a few weeks away.
What's Kepler going to get you, though? See, that's my question. Is like, because that one to me is a slam dunk. If you come to me with an offer that's halfway decent, I'm trading Max. But I don't know that he's going to get you exactly what you want. Here's the other thing that I don't understand, and it's Falvey and Levine have done this, so the precedent exists. It's just timing. They have traded top prospects in the offseason. Chase Petty, Brusdar Graterol. They have made trades that scream, we are willing to go into the very top of our prospect pool and make deals. Why that does not and has not ever translated, I don't believe, with this crew to the trade deadline is what I'm confused by. If they were always afraid to trade top prospects, I'd say, I don't like that, but you clearly are just afraid.
Well, and that's where I think this year might be different, right?
All right.
When you add Carlos Correa, things change. And yeah, like, that's one of the reasons I'm so fascinated to see what they do, because I'm telling you, I expect them to do something. Like, they're going to do something. So, yes, you know, how much are they willing to go in? But, like, who are those top prospects? I go back to that point, Judd. Who are those top prospects? It's not Austin Martin. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
So who is it? Is Simeon Woods Richardson even back? I should know this, but is he back?
Yeah, no, they don't. That's the thing.
He was battling COVID, you know, but there's a lot to like about Simeon Woods Richardson. But, like, you would move him. They'd move any of those prospects.
That's the problem. Like, none of their prospects are good enough to where you'd be like, ooh, it would hurt to lose that one, you know? And they've had 6 years to build it.
But that's where moving one of those outfielders, Kepler, Larnach, or even Wallner, if some team wants Wallner, but you have Wallner in the minors. Matt Wallner is 24 years old. Matt Wallner could help the Twins right now. I get it. He's at AAA, played one game at AAA after spending the entire season in AA. But Matt Wallner, I'm just telling you, is fully capable of playing in the major leagues today. So they have a little bit of outfield depth. So go ahead and trade from that. So that'll be also something I'll keep an eye on, because I just know, like, I know Miami has liked Max Kepler for a while. Tampa has liked Max Kepler. Not that I necessarily see a match with Tampa, but, like, you should be willing to move any of those outfielders not named Byron Buxton.
Yeah. Well, Doogie, we've kept you way longer than usual, and it was
And I look at Kirilloff totally more as a first baseman, by the way, not necessarily a left fielder. So I'm still telling you, Kirilloff would surprise me. I just know how big of fans he has in that front office. I'm not saying he's untouchable, but I would be very, very surprised if they moved Kirilloff. But I'm talking more as Kirilloff being a first baseman. I just think that's his long-term position, not left field.
Yeah. Amazing. Reckless Doogie. Speculation. Great stuff, man. Happy Reckless Speculation Thursday.
You got it, boys. Take it easy.
All right. There he is. Darren Doogie Wolfson from the 5 Eyewitness News Sports Department. And, boy, I need a smoke after that one.
Yeah.
I've never had a cigarette in my life, and I would light one up right now after.
You never have?
To that batch. Mm-mm.
Oh,
no. No, my dad's had lung cancer 3 times, and just it's always been kind
if
of
I'm drinking,
but after that, dude, I'm man.
If I'm drinking and a friend offers me one, it's a 95% chance I'm taking one. Yeah.
It's very common. Yeah. Very common.
Let's keep rolling on this Twins thing here for a second, and we can get to some old tweets exposed. I know you threw that graphic up there, Dex, but I think for on-air production purposes here,
mm-hmm.
I think we can just put all of that Twins discussion into one, and then we can just leave all of this on here too. But I have a question for you guys about – this is not going to happen. But I just want to know if you guys would consider doing – because we've talked about, like, would you ever – who would you trade? Like, is Arise untouchable? He's 25 years old. He's going to be a batting champion. Probably going to be like a 4 wins above replacement player. He's a really good player. Doesn't really have a position. He's playing first base, kind of, but he's not a long-term first baseman. Is he your second baseman? Is he just a super utility guy that hits 330 every year? It's kind of a – you don't really know what he is in a year or two from now, but he's having this amazing season. So the Athletics' Ken Rosenthal reported on Saturday that the Nationals will entertain trade offers for Juan Soto after he rejected a 15-year, $440 million contract extension, which people think is absurd. How do you turn down almost $500 million? Well, the average annual value on that contract, he'd be the 15th highest paid player in baseball based on AAV.
Yeah.
So this is the Nationals trying to get a discount, which sounds crazy because they're offering $500 million.
Right.
But they're trying to get a discount on a 23-year-old, generationally great player here. So I don't blame them for turning down this contract. Per John Heyman of the New York Post, the Nationals are intent on finding a team that will pay an enormous price for Soto. The price, according to Heyman, is 4 or more worthwhile pieces, either your 4 top prospects and or like major league ready pieces. So 4 big premium pieces. I repeat, this will never happen, but in the spirit of reckless speculation, okay? And by the way, the Twins aren't listed among the top 15 teams on some of these. Like covers.com has odds on Juan Soto's next team. The Twins are not listed in any of these. So this is not going to happen. But would you ever consider trading 4 top assets for Juan Soto and then signing him for, like, I don't know, let's call it 7 years, and then he can become a free agent when he's 30 again and some ungodly amount of money, like $30 to $40 million a year?
Sure.
And I'll give you 2 pools to choose from here. So let's say they want 2 current major leaguers and 2 top prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So you would pick 2 of these major, or if you have other names you'd throw in here, like the candidates that are on the major league roster right now are Alex Kirilloff, Luis Arraez. I would put Jose Miranda on here. And I think Yohan Duran would be someone that they would ask for too. Maybe there's another one or two that you can think of. Max Kepler. I don't think they give a rip about Max Kepler.
Yeah, Max Kepler. I think we talk about Max, but I don't think Max gets you a lot back. No. I'm sorry.
And then a couple of your top prospects. So the guys that are the hottest this year in climbing up the board are Matt Wallner and Spencer Steer, both in their early 20s. Simeon Woods Richardson and Austin Martin are the 2 players you got for Berríos last year. Austin Martin is atrocious this year, but still a highly touted prospect. Would you ever consider trading like 2 of those prospects and Kirilloff plus Miranda or Arraez plus Miranda to land a 23-year-old generational superstar and then pay him a crapload of money?
Here's what I would do. I had to pick up the little bat phone here, and I'd who's the Nationals GM? Do we know him off the top of the head?
Mike Rizzo.
Oh, is he still the GM over the Mike Rizzo?
Bit of a meathead.
Here's what I would trade. I would entertain, at least. I would give up Alex Kirilloff. This one doesn't move the needle a ton, but he was very good last year, and when he's healthy, he's really good as Jorge Polanco. I start with Kirilloff and Polanco on my big league roster. And then I give up Royce Lewis, and I give up Brooks Lee, their 8th overall pick they just made a week ago.
So say it again. So you're giving up Royce, Brooks Lee,
Jorge Polanco,
Kirilloff,
and Alex Kirilloff.
Polanco doesn't bug me as much because
he's a second baseman.
His contract runs out here soon.
Yeah.
I don't know they would want Polanco. I think they would want a younger, more standout player. I think they would ask for
Arraez, probably, right?
Arraez, Miranda, maybe both. Like Polanco, God bless him, he plays a lot. But I think if you were to conduct physicals on Twins players and you were the Nats, I think your doctors would be like, Jorge Polanco's leg and ankle is jacked. Like, he's been bugged by that for like 2 years, you guys.
Yeah.
So, I think they'd be like, well, you can throw him in, but that ain't a long term thing. So
he's more than a throw in though. He's a really good player.
Right.
He's like a four win player.
Right. But I'm saying, don't forget the one thing that the Twins consistently ignore is what the doctors say. Chris Paddock, the Mets turned it down. Oh, we'll take him. How about Sam Dyson? We'll take him. Like we need to keep in mind that doctors exist for sports teams for a reason, and I feel like the Twins don't necessarily take the consultations as seriously as they should.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he plays. I mean, he did hit the IL
for
a
minute. God bless him, but I'm just telling you, I think the exam wouldn't come back very positive on him.
Okay, but the question is, would you do this? Would you trade two current major leaguers and two top prospects? Not yes. Would the Nationals doctors not include? Okay, let's say they don't want Polanco. Cool, yeah. Arraez, you know.
Yeah, or let's say they want Arraez and Miranda. So now we're up to like five pieces. Yes, I would definitely do it. But this gets back to a far more intriguing thing, which Doogie continues to say, which is really very, very damning. And that's this. And Phil, I think you broached this too. The farm system's in bad shape.
Yeah.
And how is that the case? So like, let's say I wanted him. Let's say that I talked to Scott Burrows and I'm like, I want to keep Correa and I'm going to go to the wall to make this team as great as possible. And so now it's the Nationals are getting calls from, let's say, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Twins, you know, take five or six teams. And Doogie continues to harp on this, and he's right. Everybody else comes in, for the most part, and trumps the Twins. And it's like, oh, no, well, no, we'll yeah. give you this and this and this. And you're like, oh, okay, that's better.
Yep. And so then the response from a lot of people, I feel like, is, well, what do you want? The Twins just don't have the prospects to trade. What do you want them to do? Well, I want them over the course of a 6-year run.
Yes.
When they're not gutting, like some of these other teams are gutting their farm systems every other year to trade for stud players at the deadline in the offseason and still have better farm systems.
Right.
So your bread and butter as an organization, if you're not going to ever compete for top free agents and you're not going to, you know, you're just going to be a little bit more close to the vest with the money that you spend, then yep. you have to have more currency when it comes to prospects than they do right now. Now, there's some injuries in here that are not their fault, and I get that. But there's also some guys that just aren't performing. Balazovic, and there was an injury thing with there before, but, you know, he's made 14 starts or whatever. He made a start a few nights ago. It went like an inning. Austin Martin, they made a trade for him, and he's been terrible.
Well, and Doogie, I think, Declan, if I'm not mistaken, Doogie talked about this about a month ago on a Tuesday episode. So, Phil, you weren't on it, but he was talking about Martin and he had talked to a source who said, oh yeah, you know why he's struggling? Because they're changing his swing.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get more power, and basically said, if Austin Martin went back to his swing, so what was his swing before this season, he'd probably be fine, but they are trying to get more power. And therefore, without trying to be too flippant about this, they are submarining his opportunity at the plate because they think if they can get this adjustment made, it's going to provide more power because he long-term is not a shortstop.
And I think what I would say to that is maybe they're right. And maybe that because Austin Martin has six career minor league home runs, which mm-hmm. is a disaster. Like you can't, I'm sorry. I don't care how many walks you draw. And he does draw a lot of walks. That ain't going to fly in the major leagues. You're not going to, unless you're Luis Arraez and you're going to be hitting over 300 on a regular basis, which he doesn't. His minor league batting average is 261, gets on base at a 40% clip, but that doesn't translate to the major leagues. So they probably brought him in and said, okay, we're going to make a couple adjustments. It might hurt you in the short term, but starting in late 2022-23, you're going to be ready to rock and roll. But he's, yep. The problem is he's 23 and a half years old and maybe his value was better as a trade piece anyways, and now he's kind of damaged from that perspective.
Maybe
they'll be right in the long term.
And I've heard similar things from him on a source that said that he's kind of a bit of a head case. So like he's taken a lot of this information and he hasn't really translated it well, which I honestly sympathize for him to a degree. It's like, hey, if I'm doing this and it's successful in the minor leagues, like why do I want to change it? And then also he does not project as a legitimate long-term shortstop. His defense right. is not as good as it's advertised. And to be honest, like I wouldn't want to do this, but maybe you sell now. Maybe because if his value is going to continue to go tank, if it's going to just be the same player he was a year from now, well, now he's worth nothing. He's not worth as much as he was a year ago when you gave up Jose Berríos for him. But I wouldn't rule out trading him now and just letting someone else try to figure him out.
Yeah, I'd love to know what other teams think of his upside. If other teams would say, oh, yeah, we would trade for him. We would buy low on him. But you'd be selling low either way. And to your point, yeah. Well, maybe you're selling lower in a year.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We just covered a lot there with Doogie and then with this. And I guess my answer to the Soto question is, and I get it, it's not going to happen. But I wish the Twins were in a better spot to make it a conversation.
Yes.
You know, like, not that you would ever actually give up four pieces and gut your system like that for a guy that you probably couldn't re-sign anyways because he's gonna hit free agency anyways. But the fact that you can't even come up with a list of prospects that make sense to offer is a problem after 6 years. So it's something they're dealing with as they try to get pitching right now, too. Like, who do teams want?
Well, and this is probably an entirely different discussion in some ways, but it fits the reckless speculation lifestyle perfectly. And it's this. And I know the poll ads are like, they trust their guys and they love them, blah, blah, blah. But at what point in time do you start to ask questions? Like, at what point in time do you...
2 years ago.
Well, no, I know you do, and I do, and I think Declan does. But I'm saying, as an organization that, like, was basically in baseball hell when they finally made a substantial move in, what, 2016 as things fell apart with Terry and Paul. At what point in time, like, do you say, you know, how do we have no prospects? Like, what's going on here? Because, yeah, I mean, every organization has failures of prospects and injuries. Like, that's not, like, just a Twins thing. But it is interesting that now that you are positioned, and it's a fun conversation because in some ways the whole lucking into Correa thing, Phil, has forced their hand completely. Like, if Scott Boras doesn't put Correa here, I think we're sort of frustrated, but, like, there's an urgency now. And in some ways, if I'm ownership, I'm probably asking more questions about why we can't make substantial moves involving prospects to capitalize on the fact that, again, from a business standpoint, people like Declan Goff bought season tickets because Correa signed. If Correa does not sign, correct me if I'm wrong, Dex, I don't think that you buy tickets.
Yeah,
probably not.
So it's an interesting thing.
Well, and then I think, too, I know for a fact there's a lot of Twins fans who, you know, listen or watch the show and they sit here and like, why, you guys, they're in first place. They're, you know, they may have hit a snag there toward the end against the White Sox, but they're in first place. They could still make a move or something at the deadline. Why all the angst? Give it a chance to play out. And I think a lot of this is just 20 years of scar tissue that I have seen this play time and time again, where they got a pretty decent team or maybe a team that's ready to pop if they just could add some help to it. And by the way, if the division didn't have just four teams in the dumpster, this would be a completely different conversation here too, because they wouldn't be in first place.
Right.
They would be 8 games out of first place and hunting for a wild card spot. And so we always come to the same crossroads with the Twins, which is pretty good. This team could potentially make the playoffs, but they need a piece or two. And every time they need a piece or two, they hedge. They don't actually go and make the move because they don't want to gut from the 2024-25 team that could also be pretty darn good if you just kind of keep, you know, the line marching forward. So anyhow, this Twins discussion is powered in part by our friends at Equity Partners and the seaplanes that are flying right past my left ear right now.
Love it.
So we actually had our guy Ryan, who is one of the founders of Equity Partners, making his predictions on Purple Daily, write that down yesterday. So some good stuff from him. But Equity Partners is here to make the selling process of your house 100% hassle-free. And with their We Have program, they'll partner with you to fix up your home before you put it on the market. From simple fixes to total remodels, they will help you get the absolute most value out of your home. And the biggest benefit here is you can move before you sell. So you don't have to time everything up. It's all kind of a pain in the butt process. You can put offers in on your next home non-contingent on the sale of yours, which is huge. Learn more at equitypartnersmn.com. equitypartnersmn.com. Also, before we get to old tweets exposed here, our friends at Dennis Kirk are helping with riding season. So whether you like to get out on a Harley, a Metro Cruiser, sport bike, whatever it is, they've got 160,000 parts and accessories in stock, free shipping on orders over $89, and same-day shipping on orders placed before 8 p.m. Ride more, wait less at DennisKirk.com. All right, time for some old tweets exposed here on Mackie and Judd. What do you got for us? What incriminating things do you have for us here, Declan?
Let's start with this. We were talking about Balbi and Levine going in and hedging at the trade deadline. Let's go to old Dex tweets. I'll self-report here to start. Just a gut reaction here. July 31st, 2019, making sense of the Sam Dyson acquisition. NL league average for relievers, I point out, 4.5 ERA, you know, 24 K percentage. Walk percentage just under 10. And Sam Dyson, look how good Sam Dyson is, everyone. He's going to be great. He's going to be a great addition to the Twins. I think Sam Dyson made one appearance, got shelled, and then turned out like he hated his girlfriend's cat and was just a disaster. So I'm making light of Sam Dyson being a good acquisition, and he did absolutely nothing
amazing
with the Twins.
Knuckles.
He has not pitched in the major league since that trade.
Woof.
Or since the Twins dumped him. I don't know. Has he been just injured? He's not that old. He literally hasn't pitched since July or August of 2008.
out of baseball with his abusive poor Knuckles the cat, if not his girlfriend too.
And Knuckles, is a
Snuckles. It's Snuckles.
Snuckles. Yeah, whatever.
Put
you know
some
what
respect
I mean.
On that feline.
Hey, listen,
name.
I'm a dog person now. Okay, I grew up with cats, but now I'm a dog person.
All right, Judd, this is just hilarious. It's not necessarily like incriminating wrong. I just want to know more details on it. You said at the end of 2019. If I ever open a baseball frat house, I'm going to invite Dobnak and Smeltzer to join, and I think we'd all get along.
I don't know why I included Smeltzer. Dobnak makes perfect sense.
He looks like he
they both look like guys who could drink a beer.
Yeah. But I mean, Dobnak would be great fun. And you know what? The Dobber and I, we get along great.
Yeah.
We get along absolutely great. We could talk about our exploits in sports and how we both weren't that good. He's a little bit improved on me, but you know, no, I don't remember why Smeltzer got in there, though. That's a very good question.
I've heard the Dobber does enjoy himself an IPA or two.
Yeah. He seems like a fun dude.
He does.
Like, he does seem like a genuinely good and fun dude.
Can you imagine? They gave him a contract. They gave that guy a multi-year.
3 years, right?
One of the funniest contracts ever.
Dude, I think it was longer than that. Wasn't it?
It might have been 3 with an option, 4 years. I
think it was like 5.
Considered a steal, right?
5 for like
a steal at the time.
Yeah, it was.
What a deal for the Twins.
Staggered.
But there was no reason to do it, right? Didn't they have him under team control for like 4 more years?
Phil Hughes got a contract with no reason to do it, too.
So he signed a 5 years. It was a, oh my God. It's a 5-year ironclad deal. And it's only for like $9 million. So it wasn't that much. But and then team options through 2028. And he hasn't pitched yet this year. He did make 14 appearances last year with a 7.64 earned run average. Yuck. So, anyways. Okay.
All right.
What else?
One more for Phil. I think we talked about this on Monday or Tuesday when you were being a beat writer for the Twins. And you were just pumping up the Nick Blackburn type of
I've self-reported this on numerous occasions. Yeah,
a possible sign that Nick Blackburn's stuff was indeed better last night. He recorded a personal high season high 24 looking strikes. There is a lot
baffling hitters.
Yeah, there's a lot of Nick Blackburn possible old tweets exposed to in about the March-April of 2012 range when Phil was at spring training.
Yeah, this was is this the 10-year anniversary today of this tweet?
Oh my God, it is.
Does that say July 21st?
It is.
Let's all sell it. I think I win. So let's celebrate the 10-year anniversary.
Happy birthday.
Of this Nick Blackburn propaganda.
Happy anniversary to that tweet.
Amazing. All right, that's Reckless Speculation Thursday here on Mackie and Judd. And over on Purple Daily, we will do a deep dive into what's the deal with Kellen Mond going into his second training camp. Has anyone seen him? Talk to him? What's going on with the Vikings' third-round pick? So thanks for hanging out with us here. Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment Speculation Therapy, whatever you need from us.